estate planning, and education planning. Doug and Linda are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing financial and investment services since 1983. Doug and Linda will be answering your questions on WPTF's phone lines anytime during the next hour. Call 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Call toll-free 1-800-662-7979. And for mobile phones, it's star 680. And now, Doug and Linda Lewis and Money Matters.
Hello there in North Carolina. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner, once again welcoming you to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters with Doug and Linda has been providing you with a personal financial hotline for all of your questions about investments, estate planning, tax planning, money management, and retirement planning for over 20 years. And again, with me as usual tonight is my wife, Linda, who works with me in our firm, Lewis Financial Management.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Doug and I are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing investment and financial advice since 1983.
For over 20 years, we've been answering your questions on the WPTF phone lines. They are your questions and our answers.
So sit back and enjoy, or if you're free, call us tonight on the open lines. We'll take your calls anytime during the next hour. You're free to call in and ask any financial question about your own personal financial planning. Call us at 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Or you can call us toll-free long distance at 1-800-662-7979.
Well, financial planning is everyone's business, and still for most folks, money matters are just a big puzzle. Folks have questions about planning for retirement, planning for a child's college education. They don't know the difference between financial planning and money management. They want to know a lot these days. They want to know what's a mutual fund, what's a limited partnership, what's a REIT, what's a will, what's a living will. And yes, it really can confuse you, but you're not alone. Because in a world crowded with new investments, changing tax laws, rapidly evolving insurance products, and volatile economic cycles, more and more people are looking for clear direction in their financial lives. And yet, unfortunately, the busier and the more successful they are, the less time they have to sort out their financial affairs. And people are asking, is there any solution?
Well, yes, Doug, there certainly is a solution. Out of this increasingly complicated financial environment has come a new breed of professionals that are trying to solve people's money puzzles. And that's the Certified Financial Planner.
It's the Certified Financial Planner who offers something that people don't get from the traditional stockbroker, money manager, accountant, insurance agent, or bank trust officer. And that's a way to consolidate all aspects of people's financial affairs into one financial plan. It's the Certified Financial Planner who knows how to pull together all six areas of a client's financial life.
Doug, I think for many people, the first area of financial planning is cash flow planning, with questions about their emergency fund, their mortgage, their credit cards, and reducing their debt.
Well, yes, Linda, and yet for many people, the second area of financial planning is retirement planning. Those who are working want to know how to compute what they'll need to live on during retirement and how much they should be saving for retirement. They want to know what investments they should choose from the choices in their company's 401k plan. Others are retiring and have received a lump sum payout option from their company's retirement plan, and they want to know, should they take it? And if so, how should they invest it?
Well, Doug, the third area of financial planning that must be dealt with is estate planning. For most people, over their working years, their estate has grown. How can they reduce their estate taxes? And they wonder, are their simple wills sufficient, or maybe they should be considering the complicated world of trusts?
If that's the third area, Linda, the fourth area of financial planning cannot be overlooked. This is tax planning. People are interested in both tax reduction strategies and tax reduction investments, home mortgage interest, charitable giving, tax shelters, tax-free bonds, questions about capital gains taxes, estate taxes, gift taxes, and how to sell real estate tax-free using trusts. What a confusion.
Well, Doug, we can't forget the fifth area of financial planning, which is insurance planning. How much life insurance does a family really need? Do they have too little insurance or maybe too much insurance? Should they have whole life, term, or universal? Should they have long-term nursing care coverage?
You're right, Lynn. And of course, the sixth and most important area of financial planning is investment planning. Here, the questions never stop. What's the best way to diversify my investments? Is now a safe time to invest in stocks? What about bonds? What kind of stock mutual funds? Bond mutual funds, equipment leasing partnerships, REITs, CDs, gold, annuities.
So, Doug, it seems that at last it's time for people to understand that a certified financial planner is really the only one who can tie together all six parts of their financial puzzle. And to you out there listening, if you've got a question on your mind about cash flow planning, retirement planning, estate planning, tax planning, insurance, or investments, call us now on the open lines and we'll answer your financial planning questions. Those numbers to call are 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Out-of-towners, call us toll-free at 1-800-662-7979. And if you just want to sit back and listen to the callers through the years, welcome to the show.
Investments offered through HBEC, Inc., investment advice through Lewis Financial Management. Lewis Financial Management and HBEC, Inc. are not affiliated entities.
Well, thanks for joining us once again on Money Matters with Doug and Linda. And, Doug, last week we had a really excellent show. I think we had about five callers. And we were discussing some of the questions that people should be asking their financial advisor in the new year. Can you recap what some of those questions were?
Well, yeah, because right at the beginning of the year, everybody is they're facing all of their, you know, their decisions. They're going to do it right this year and so forth. So I thought just a few questions to ask would be good to know when you meet with your financial advisor this year. A couple of questions that popped up were, following this changing year of 2011, what's my true financial condition now? A lot of people don't have any idea what happened and where they are now and what's their true condition. That's the first thing. And the second one is, do I need to make any adjustments to my investment mix? You know, whether it costs me commissions or doesn't cost. But you should ask the question, do I need to make any adjustments to my mix? How about rebalancing and so on? Third question was, how are you going to be able to help me stay focused on the long-term results of my portfolio? What are you going to be doing for me this year?
Sometimes folks have been working with someone and they think it's time to make a change.
Yeah, and because they're not getting much attention.
And also, sometimes there's a life event that happens, whether it's forced retirement or losing a spouse or, you know, suffering an illness, or maybe your spouse is an illness.
Well, you jumped. That's right, Lynn, because you just jumped right into what my fourth question was going to be. It was, do I need to reconsider one or more of my time horizons because of some life-changing event? Whether it be IBM is just giving me notice that I'm getting ready to be terminated, or I've got a life event happening where someone has been diagnosed with an illness. All these things happen, and do I need to reconsider one or more of my time horizons? Fifth question I would say is, how much money do I really need in order to retire? That's a biggie.
That is a key question.
Yeah. What is the amount? How big does the pot need to be to where I'm comfortable that it will support me in all of what I want to do?
Doug, wouldn't you agree that a lot of folks, especially because we've met so many of these people that have come to our office, a lot of folks are so diligent about working and accumulating over their lifetime?
They are. I guess one of the most common comments that I get in the office these days, Linda, is, gee, Doug, everything you're telling me goes against the conventional wisdom I've always heard. And then I have to go ahead and sort of educate them. That conventional wisdom came from where? From your aunt, from your uncle, from your benefits counselor at work, from some newsletter,
from a magazine.
No.
Erroneous newsletter,
yeah,
as we read.
One of the most common ones, Linda, was this. I heard this last week. Well, Doug, I always heard that after I retire, I'm going to have a lower cost of living, and so my taxes are going to be lower because I'm going to be spending less. Wrong answer. My experience doing this for more than 20 years now is you will probably spend more, and don't take that assumption that your expenses are going to be less and therefore you'll be drawing less income and your taxes are going to be less. That's not the way it works.
You might like to travel more.
You've got
or give gifts.
You know what? You've had 8 hours a day, Linda, that you've been going to work. What are you going to do with those 8 hours every day?
That's
you're going to spend some money.
That's right. Yes. Especially if you have grandkids.
Oh, yeah. Grandkids occupy a lot
gift
of
gift category. Oh, yes. It's fun.
Question seven was, what about college expenses rising? Should I start some sort of a college savings account for my grandchildren? That's a question to ask. And then I guess the last question that popped into my head was, what about taxes? Commentators keep discussing the possibility of higher taxes in 2012. How should I react with my portfolios under your care with regard to tax projections? So those are a couple of the questions that I think you should have armed when you go to see your financial advisor for 2012.
You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. And if you've got a question on your mind about your financial picture, give us a call on the open lines at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. And toll free, it is 800-662-7979. And you can visit our website at lfmadvisor.com. And if you'd like to set up an appointment to meet with us at Lewis Financial Management, LLC, call us at 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000. Well, Doug, isn't it interesting? Well, it's a comment that I heard last week from someone that was seeking an advisor. And what they said was, when you seek an advisor, beware of expensive wrap accounts. What does that mean?
Wrap accounts have caused so much confusion. The short answer that I'm going to tell my listening public is avoid wrap accounts. If anybody tells you that they offer wrap accounts, watch out. Now, what's a wrap account? Well, wrap accounts go back a long ways. They go back to the, the late 80s, as I recall, early 90s, when brokerage firms offered one wrap account to hold the whole portfolio for the investor for a flat quarterly fee or a flat annual fee. And the story was it will cover all administration, all commissions, all management expenses. They also had names. They called them funds of funds. Or they included funds of funds. Well, now, unfortunately, this wrap account has moved over into the world of financial advisors who are calling themselves fee-only financial planners. And, you know, there was a cute cartoon last week in Dilbert that was making fun of this and everything. You know, guy gets a billion. I think he ended up with $1 billion, and he goes to see a financial advisor, and he says, you're going to charge me, $10 million a year?
1%.
Yeah. For my managing my billion-dollar portfolio and putting it in index funds. And
he said, that means I'm going to pay you what?
And his answer was, somebody's got it. You don't think those index funds get there by themselves, do you? Okay. The point is that those who know that wrap accounts are very, very expensive ways to get to the investor. Now, here's the way they're promoted today by, quote, fee-only advisors. We will take your money and you will sign a power of attorney giving us authority, otherwise known as discretion, to buy and sell on your behalf. So you sign limited power of attorney and we will charge you a wrap fee, one wrap fee that covers everything. Well, it sounds really good the way it's promoted, except there's something wrong with that. If you're going to be going into mutual funds, then you're paying the fees of those mutual funds, and then you're paying for this wrap fee to wrap them, and then you're giving up control to the advisor. It's all very, very expensive. So They're marketed under a lot of different names these days. Sometimes they still call them funds of funds. Some call this time they call them wrap funds and wrap accounts and tax advantage wraps, where you can put them in different buckets. But the bottom line is they cost you a lot of money. In my opinion, if somebody says that they do wrap accounts, that's a good reason to look somewhere else. Okay?
You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. And if you've got a question about your portfolios or your accounts, give us a call on the open lines at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. And if you're out of town, it is toll-free at 1-800-662-7979. Well, Doug, you know, there was an interesting article about inherited IRAs. And as we stated earlier, since a lot of folks, while they're working, have the option of contributing to some type of retirement account with their employer. It could be a 401k or a 457, et cetera. And oftentimes people accumulate a lot of money in a retirement account. But what happens when that individual passes away? Let's say
where was that article, Linda?
I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal. And it was
let me just get us down to the basics, then we'll get a little more involved.
Okay.
First of all, I like to think of investments as chickens, and I like to think of retirement accounts as chicken houses, because there is a wolf that would like to eat your chickens, and as long as your chickens are in a chicken house, that wolf, otherwise known as the IRS, cannot touch your chickens. So we have a chicken house, and we've got these investments in there, otherwise known as chickens. When a person dies, if they're married, their spouse can have a chicken house, and the chickens from the retirement account of the first to die can automatically roll over to the second to die's IRA account. No problem. The wolf never touches them. Any spouse can automatically have their husband or their wife's IRA money rolled over, and there's no problem there about the inheritance. Then the question is, well, what about if it's not a spouse? And then we come to some very complicated rules. Matter of fact, they are so complicated that the IRS, which rarely ever comes up with rulings, actually did a ruling recently. What they said was the IRS actually gave a ruling in which a teenager who had inherited her father's retirement account gave her permission to undo the lump sum distribution by her mother and transfer the money into something called an inherited IRA. That's really unusual for a private letter ruling to come from the IRS, because they rarely allow tax-deferred retirement assets that someone has already inherited and withdrawn as a lump sum to later be put back into an inherited individual retirement account. So that's how complicated they are. The story is that there are a lot of special precautions for those who are not spouses. Now, if it's going to be going to a child, the child cannot go ahead and avoid the taxes.
Right.
And let's say it's $1 million IRA, there's going to be maybe $400,000 of taxes if the child just takes the money. But there is this animal called an inherited IRA, in which instead of the child having to take the whole thing out, paying the taxes, the child has the right to go ahead and leave it in this IRA called an inherited IRA. Now, they're very complicated, and you need to think carefully before you do these. Parents, especially those who are single, might want to set up some sort of a see-through trust to protect an inherited IRA. But there are a lot of special rules to watch out for when dealing with inherited IRAs. There's the matter of moving and retitling the account correctly. There is the matter of meeting certain deadlines. If the one who passed away dies after age 70 and a half, when the required withdrawals from the parent were supposed to have started, yet they didn't get a withdrawal for that year, then that heir has got to do so by December 31, or they're facing a 50% penalty. There's a lot of other things, but there are pitfalls to inherited IRAs, And if you are considering something like this, for sure, see a certified financial planner and watch carefully what you're going to do and then do it properly. We've done a number of these, of course, for our clients. Sometimes they're right. Sometimes they're wrong.
Let me ask you a question. If with regard to the inherited IRA, if the child does take out that money, then they're being taxed, right?
Yeah.
Is it as if the person is still alive? Because
okay.
Are they going to
yeah.
have to pay that 10% penalty because the child is young?
No. Think back to what I said about investments being chickens and investments in retirement accounts being chickens in chicken houses. If you take out all the chickens, then the wolf's going to eat between a third and a half of your chickens.
Correct.
If you can find a way to leave them in the chicken house, that's the inherited IRA, then there's a way just to get eggs out of it.
Uh-huh.
And the income, otherwise known as the eggs in my illustration, that income can flow out over the life expectancy of the deceased. So the minimum distribution, which was the one who died,
so that's
which was
the
small
protection. Then.
That's the protection,
right?
But you have to be careful because maybe it's not right. Maybe the child wants the whole lump sum, and so on.
That can be dangerous, can't it?
Just need to know all the options before you do something that's irreversible.
So if you're listening tonight and maybe you're a widow or a widower and you've lost a spouse and you have questions about what you should do in your situation, there are, many questions that people have. And so it's important to write those questions down, work with a certified financial planner that can assist you in getting answers to your questions. And in this new year, many of our listeners have procrastinated, right, Doug?
That is true.
So it's time. Financial planning is your business.
I love the client who came to see me and said, Doug, I've been a faithful listener of yours for 15 years. And I said, well, what took you so long to come on in? Anyway.
Yeah, sometimes it does take time.
Yeah, procrastination All right. doesn't belong to anyone, sex, or age.
You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. And if you are listening right now, or if you don't have a radio, you can catch us on WPTF.com. You can live stream us. And if you've got a question, you can call us on the open lines this evening at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. And toll free at 1-800-662-7979. Well, that was an interesting election yesterday in the South Carolina primary, wasn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't help but think about it. I wonder what the retirement plans look like. I was considering that. You know, last year was a good year, Linda. A lot of people don't know it was a good year, but last year was a good year. You just had to know which side you were on. But the stock market, the Dow, ended up about, I think it was up about 7%. And even in the midst of that, there was one type of investment that did tremendous.
And what was that, Doug?
Those were the REITs, the Real Estate Investment Trust. You know, it's pretty amazing. Not many people know. But the REITs, which are stocks of real estate investment companies, office REITs, shopping center REITs, apartment REITs, they generate very high yields. And last year, they did over 8.7%. I mean, not many people know about that. Matter of fact, there was an article that said, can the streak last? Can the streak last? Can they go ahead and continue doing what they've done? Let's take a call in, then we'll come back to REITs because REITs are very interesting animals. Let's see. I think we've got Dave on hold. Dave, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
Hey, Doug. Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
My question is about Roth eligibility. I contribute the max currently to a company, 401.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm wondering, can I still contribute to a Roth IRA?
A Roth IRA through the company or a Roth IRA on your own?
On my own.
Well, what's your income?
It's about $120K.
Yeah, you probably can. How old are you?
51.
51 years old. Tell me a little bit more about yourself, and I'll tell you whether I think you should. Okay. You're 51 years old and married?
Single.
Single. Any children?
Two, but they're adults.
Okay. Income is $127,000. What's your investment portfolio look like, the non-chicken house stuff, all the stuff that's outside of retirement plans?
I have two mutual funds that are target retirement funds, and I have about $50K in those. I keep about $30K in cash, and I have about $150K in equity, home equity.
Okay, well, let's go down the line and see. Okay, now let's go over to the retirement side before I comment. On the retirement side, in the 401K, how much is over there?
In the 401K, I have about $400, and in a cash balance that's inactive now, I have about $150.
About $150?
Yeah.
Okay, and in the $400,000 in the 401K portion, what's in that?
That's a target retirement fund.
Okay, so let's look and see first, before we go to the matter of the Roth, about what's wrong with what you've got. Pretty much everything you've got, in my opinion, is wrong. Okay? First of all, why are you in target retirement funds? Have you read all of the exposure on those that's been happening recently?
No, I haven't.
Okay. All right. Do you know what a mutual fund is? What's a mutual fund?
It's a pooling of assorted stocks.
Right. Okay. And since the manager of this fund is buying and selling, then do you think it's important to know something about him? I mean, you're giving money. You're giving $50,000 to one of these funds, right?
Correct.
I'll bet you don't even know the manager's name.
I do not.
As a matter of fact, the whole thing is this is somehow constructed to be magically worth a certain amount at the time that you retire. There's nothing there. What kind of fund is it? Who's the manager? What are the portfolio? These target retirement funds, they are to be excluded, in my opinion, from your portfolio.
Okay.
So on your personal side, you have a $50,000. That's wrong. You got another $50,000. And then what did you say the $30,000 was?
That's cash.
That's cash. Okay. So altogether, in the non-retirement side, you've got $130,000 that you can work with. Right. All right. Then over on the retirement side, you have $190,000. And you say the entire $400 in the 401K is in another one of those target funds?
Right.
Okay. All right. So that needs to be redesigned also. That's just as bad.
Okay.
Now we come to the $127,000 of income. Your living expenses, if you're single and you don't have any kids at home, how much do you spend? What's a guesstimate?
Well, mortgage and utilities is about $2,000 and then maybe another $1,000 or so in groceries.
So you think maybe you're spending about $50,000 a year?
Yeah.
Okay. So for the moment, and if you want to get more in-depth, schedule an appointment, call into the office, schedule an appointment, and we go through each one of these numbers very specifically, all your expenses and so forth. But for tonight, if you're spending $50,000 and you're bringing in $127,000, and then any idea what you paid in taxes?
Probably 20.
Okay. So
maybe higher.
All right. So let's say 30,000. So 80 from 120. So we got about 25,000 left over, maybe about 2,000 a month surplus, right?
That sounds right.
Okay. All right. So we got 2,000 a month surplus. And how long do you want to work?
Till 65.
So okay. Sure. All right. So what we want to do is we want to go ahead and build this thing. Now, why do you want a Roth IRA? Because you've been told that it's got some wonderful tax benefits, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, if you were 35 years old, I would absolutely agree with you. But at 51 years old, you don't want a Roth IRA because it's not the tax benefits are only on the growth,
right.
not on the investment. And so what, you don't have enough years left to where it makes sense to you to set something aside just because you might be able to get a little bit out later on without paying tax on it.
Okay.
What you want to do, in my opinion, is look at the $130,000, divide that into a small portfolio, maybe, four mutual funds, each of an equal dollar amount, maybe something like that, and then start adding to that at the rate of the $2,000 a month, whatever your surplus is. Build that up there. You're still working with after-tax money, but the benefit of this, as opposed to the Roth, is you cannot rebalance that Roth. Let's say that you could go in and start putting in a couple $1,000s, even $5,000. What are you going to do with it? You can't make it part of the whole portfolio. You can't balance the thing. You can't change and move from one to the other. So you've let the tax tail wag the dog, and it's a real tiny dog anyway, which means the tail is real small.
Right.
It's if you were 35 years old, and I ran some numbers and said, yeah, let me see, because you can only up until age 59 and a half. So you got maybe 7 years of growth of a small amount. Now, if you had 20 years or 30 years, yeah, then I'd put it on a spreadsheet and I'd say, yeah, that makes sense. But in my office, generally, after 40 years old, we get very hesitant about recommending Roth IRAs. At 45, we usually say no.
Yeah.
I don't know if all of that gives you a long answer to a short question, but the overall view, then over inside your 401k, we need to look away from, that list of all the investment choices you've got there?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Go through that list and X out anything that has the word target date on it. You don't want any of those. Okay. And then look, if you can, get rid of anything that says index funds.
All right.
Okay. Now go to the funds that are there and look up who are the managers, what's their track record, what's their style, how have they done. And from there, you and I have a list of selections that we can go ahead and build something with the
$400,000. Okay.
Does that help?
Okay. Yeah, that helps a lot.
Great.
Hey, Dave, it kind of reminds me, you remember when your kids were young? Mm-hmm. Who's mining the kids? You're not just going to let anyone babysit the kids, right?
Right.
So it's the same thing with your funds. Who's mining your funds?
The SEC was very upset about these target date funds because after what happened in 2008. All the people that were supposed to have target dates set in front of them, magically they're going to retire, it didn't work. And they're being marketed and promoted as some sort of a magical way to accumulate X amount in such and such a year. That's not the world of investing.
You want to know?
I didn't look at it as a magical way. It's more probably as a more of a hands-off, low maintenance, automatically rebalancing way as you get older, right?
Yeah. Well, the guys that are really low maintenance that have no mortgages and everything. You know who they are? Those are the ones that sleep under the bridge. You know the homeless guy? Yeah. He has no problem with mortgage payments. He doesn't have any problems at all. Okay. On the other hand, I don't think that that's where we're trying to get to. Hands off is not where you want to be. You want to be hands on with the help of somebody, at least somebody like myself, that can help hold your hand.
Okay. Point taken.
Oh, thanks for calling, Dave. And we hope you have a great week. And if we can help you anymore, just give us a call at the office, okay?
Okay.
And that number is 872-7000. And thanks. You're doing great. You've accumulated.
Well, and that's all after a divorce. Right?
Yes, I want to applaud
very good.
You.
very good.
The kids are grown.
Yeah.
You're good to go. So let's see if we can tweak this a little bit.
You probably have the ability to accumulate over $1 million by the time that you're 65, I'll bet you. Yeah, I'd like
that's
to run.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Well, all right, give us a call, Dave.
Congratulations.
Okay.
Take care. All right.
Thank you. Bye.
You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. And if you've got a question, just like Dave, call us on the open lines at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. And if you're out of town, it's toll-free, 1-800-662-7979. Well, Doug, isn't it interesting how folks do get a little confused just because they heard the sales pitch?
Well, yeah.
They read it somewhere.
Yeah, it's like I don't understand, but I hear it so often. It gets old in my office when you ask them why they're doing something,
And why'd you buy those annuities?
Well, I heard that last week a lot. But what I was thinking was more like, if I don't see it, I won't spend it. So therefore, just go ahead and max out my 401k and put everything over there. Well, that's the wrong answer. I mean, you're just throwing your money at a dartboard and seeing what's going to happen and everything. And then, so what are my choices? Well, X, Y, Z, et cetera. And then I come down to, target date fund. That sounds nice. I don't have to think about it. Well, see, that's wrong. You're just playing with your financial future.
And, it's not that there's something wrong or right about buying an annuity or buying a target date fund, but people need education, don't
right.
they?
That's
they need
right.
to understand, okay, if I'm going to make this decision, I need to understand a little bit about this vehicle or this transaction.
Right. Okay.
And not just be blindly doing it. Okay.
Let's go back. Let's go back to this matter of the REITs.
Calm down now.
I'm sorry. Okay. Let's go back to these REITs, because the REITs are another thing that are very much.
Now, Doug, you have to help our listeners understand what is a REIT.
Oh, okay. All right. REITs, REIT.
That's, and what does that
stand for? Real Estate Investment Trust.
Uh-huh.
Real Estate Investment Trust.
And what do they do?
Okay. These real estate investment trusts, they're very interesting animals. They are stocks of real estate companies which manage portfolios of commercial properties like office parks, shopping malls, apartment buildings, and they generate very high yields as compared to other stocks because they have a special tax law that governs them. Now, the story on the REITs and the reason they are so popular and the reason they give so much income is that most companies can simply, take a company like IBM, okay? They can reinvest the bulk of their earnings in their business, but a real estate investment trust can't do that. They're required to pay out 90% of their taxable income to the shareholders each year. What that means is the investors are getting much more than they would otherwise because the double tax that corporate, there is this thing called the double tax. IBM pays tax on its profits, and what's left over is a dividend that goes out to the investors, and the investors pay tax on that. So by the time they got it, there were two taxes. REITs avoid the double taxation. There's only one tax. So that's the story on why they're so popular. And last year, they had this big track record and so forth. But the question is, and this is what the article was all about, it said, are they still good to buy? Now, there are REITs that are trading on the stock exchange every day, some very well-known ones. Public Storage is one well-known one, and Highwoods Properties, and all these are publicly traded REITs. But there are other REITs that are not trading, and they avoid the risk of the value of the REIT. The traded REITs, their value can go up and down. And there is the risk the value will go down, but the income will stay the same generally. And that's why they're so popular. Even through 2008, the income on those REITs just was pretty much the same on all the good solid ones.
Well, Doug, is it true that a REIT can be a stabilizing factor
in a portfolio? Yes. If it's a non-traded REIT, it will stabilize the portfolio because it's not trading.
Because
it's
the
just producing income.
It's fluctuating all the time. And so if you're in stocks or a stock mutual fund, then your values are going to go up day to day, right?
Yeah. But the opinion of the writer who wrote the article, can the streak last? Because they outpaced virtually everything in 2011. Can the streak last is what he asked. And the answer was back and forth. There was a Morningstar analyst who said that what he thinks is out there is either valued fairly now or overvalued, but that is on the traded REITs. You can go ahead and avoid that by looking at the non-traded REITs. Okay?
Sounds good. You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. If you've got a question, you can call us on the open lines at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. And if you're out of town, call us toll free at 1-800-662-7979. You can live stream on WPTF.com. You can listen to us on your computer, can't you? All right.
Juanita, this is Doug Lewis. How can I help you?
Hi, Doug.
Hi, Juanita.
First, let me tell you, we really enjoy your show. You've helped us out before, and we really appreciate it. But
okay, that makes me feel real good.
Oh, I'm so glad it does. You've even sent us some information that we've really appreciated. But aside from that, I'm a Canadian citizen, and I recently heard that my family is all in Canada, and I recently heard that when my mother dies and her estate is divided or whatever they do, that I will be penalized and have to pay some extraordinary tax that my brothers in Canada would not have to pay. And I'd like to look into it, but I'm really at a loss for where to start.
Your mother hasn't died yet?
No.
You know about the size of the estate at all, Juanita?
Well, not really. I really don't have any specifics. It's probably, well, it'd be more than half a million, but not a million.
All right, more than half a million, and that'll be divided three ways?
Uh-huh. About half. I'd say, you know, good half.
It's a funny question you're asking me, Juanita, because usually I'm asked the other side of the question, which I thought you were going to ask me, which is what about you? Because you're in a unique situation. Your husband, American citizen?
Yes.
Yeah, you are in a unique citizen at the time that you die.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. There is a special law that hits you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the one I thought you were going to ask me, and I was all geared up to give you the answer on that.
Oh, well, okay, that'll be part
But the other one I'm going to have to research. If you call me at the office, I'll see what I can do about that one.
Our number in Raleigh is 872-7000. That's USA 7000.
Okay.
If it's taxable, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, now there are what do they call those laws that are they are equal between countries. For example, you can't live in Germany and then come over to the United States and inherit money back and forth and not pay on one side or the other.
Right. We pay on one side, but
right. I think that's all. But I will be happy to put you in touch with somebody or see if I can do the research myself to check and see if there's a second hit. I didn't think there was a second hit.
Mm-hmm.
For you as an American, as long as the estate paid the taxes up there.
Right, and I'm not an American. I'm a Canadian citizen.
Right, I cannot see why, but I can look up that one for you.
So what happens if I die?
But now if you die, you got a big problem.
Really?
Yeah, this is the deal. There is something called the unlimited marital deduction. Are you familiar with that?
Never heard of it.
You can leave to a spouse an unlimited amount. A million, 2 million, 10 million, etc. And there is no tax whatsoever when you leave to your spouse. That's called the unlimited marital deduction.
Okay.
But the problem is that every American citizen has a tax credit against their estate. Well, this unlimited marital deduction, I mean, this unified credit is not allowed for non-U.S. spouses. But there is a special ruling which has to do with setting up a qualified trust for non-U.S. spouses.
Uh-huh.
And that's a special qualified trust, which I recently have gone through doing a little research on and have recommended because I have a client who is married to, where are they from, Linda? Where is she from?
Australia.
Australia, right. Right. And that's where I came across it. If you would like to go ahead, when you call in at the office, I'll see if I can get that those rules and regulations to you. And what you need to do in your will, you see, and in your husband's will, is you need to have this trust identified.
So we need to go in and have our will changed or
yes.
Whatever, updated or whatever?
Yes, yes. You never can tell. For example, let's say your mom dies and leaves those assets to you, and then you leave, and then all of a sudden you do have a problem at your death. You see what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
So you want to be aware of that trust and of that provision. For the non-U.S. spouses, and if you call up the office, I will find out if there's anything I can give you that tells you what happens to a Canadian estate's inheritance that's received by a Canadian married to a U.S. citizen.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just sort of funny when you go into the lawyer's office and you sit down and you discuss all this. They never tell you anything, you know.
Yeah.
They don't ever mention the danger of an I love you will, you know, and
Yeah, it's really bad. You want to have some fun sometime, get a book called, what's that book I've been reading, Linda, that I like so much?
Loving Trust.
Loving Trusts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't recommend it as a thing to do yourself, but it's a real eye-opener, and it's about people using certain trust and doing it themselves and protecting themselves from lawyers who really don't know what they're doing and why they don't advise clients certain ways. And, you know, lawyers sometimes, and I have to say I was in law school myself one day, and I deal with a lot of attorneys, but many attorneys are guilty of what they don't know they cover up by simply trying to dazzle you with their brilliance.
Well, you know, it's like when you go to the doctor's office. You just have to remember that you're in charge of your body and you are mm-hmm. the last say with your body. And if you just can't leave your body in the hands of anybody else explicitly, and it looks like you just can't leave your money in the hands of anybody else explicitly either. You've got to do
the best way to work is work through a financial planner mm-hmm. and let him choose the attorney, because that way the planner talks to you one-on-one as I do, gets your goals, brings all these things to your attention, then he discusses with the attorney what the attorney should be doing, and together you know it works out the way you want.
The number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Doug, and Linda, too, for your help.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Well, that was enjoyable. I think Juanita, all lawyers aren't bad. There's some really good lawyers out there. You just have to learn how to go through what's out there and how to work in tandem with the attorney, and some of them are outstanding, and they know their way around these trusts, but sometimes it's not that easy.
You know, Doug, I had a friend that is going through a situation, and because of her situation, I encouraged her to make sure that in the new year that she did one thing. And I was so delighted to find out that she did what I asked her, and that was to visit the matter of her estate plans. And so she has gotten that in order, and she's getting ready to sign her documents. But that is something that people do need to do. And a lawyer can assist you in getting your estate plans taken care of. But anyway, that's just a tidbit of...
Well, that's encouraging to know somebody follows the advice. That's good.
Yes, indeed.
Lynn, there was an article that, I don't know if you read it, maybe it was something about it. Yeah, the article said more elderly find they can't afford to not work. What was that all about?
Well, an article I had read in the Wall Street Journal, the Weekend Journal, and it is a sad thing, but it in America and around the world, I'm sure, more of our elderly find that they must work to survive because they haven't accumulated enough assets. And the article spoke of a lady who, at 78, can't retire from her job as a tour guide in Honolulu.
Hmm.
And anyway, so she decided to stay on after she lost half of her $300,000 in her retirement account during the downturn.
Is that what happened? She had a big, at least $300,000 retirement fund. She lost half of it.
And being the spouse of a Navy retiree, she barely had enough to live on after her spouse preceded her in death. So she was counting on Social Security and her husband's Navy pension. And she represents a growing number of elderly people that are working or seeking work increasingly with the expectation that they will stay on the job for as long as they can.
That's scary. That's scary because you're not supposed to. I mean, you're just not supposed to go ahead and in your 70s and 80s and you know, to still have to work. If you're enjoying what you're doing, it's one thing. But I guess it's the fault of not planning, Lynn.
Well, some failed to plan well, or they spent their working lives earning paychecks too small to amass much savings.
Well,
and
maybe
others just suffered financial losses because of their savings being depleted by chronic illness or everyday bills.
Well, maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year that that our younger listeners and our listeners who are worried about being, you know, able to make it, that they set their goals to meet with a certified financial planner, fee-based, one who is not going to try and sell you something. Let's see it happen this year so they don't end up like that.
Alan, this is Doug Lewis, certified financial planner. How can I help you?
My mother is 74, and she has a majority of her investments now in certificates of deposit at different banks.
Right.
She does have some tax-free bonds and a few what I would call mutual funds in utility.
Right.
What kind of investments should she be making now, considering her age?
She's 74.
74.
How much does she have in CDs?
Probably $400,000.
$400,000 in CDs, and how much in her tax-free bonds?
Probably in all of her other investments, around $200,000 more.
Do you know what her living expenses are?
She lives well within her means and with a little Social Security she gets.
What's her health like?
Excellent.
She's a widow, Alan?
Yes, she is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, assuming, you know, God forbid she died tomorrow, then this might be fine. However, assuming if she's still in good health, then she's really hurting her heirs. By the way, what about her home?
It's paid for.
How much is it worth?
Probably $80,000 to $100,000.
Well, one thing that jumps out right off the bat, knowing that she's a widow, if she's got $400 in CDs and $200 in munis and $100,000, that's $700,000. And if there's going to be any growth, even if there's only about a 3%, you know, when you're talking about those munis and utility funds and CDs, they're not real exciting. But even if that was the case with only 3%, at 15 years, she'd have over $1 million. So from the investment side, what I would do is I would have her in a diversified portfolio. I'd take the 4 and 2, the $600,000, and maybe break it into $50,000 unit sizes. So if you got $600,000 and you divide it by your $50,000 units, then she'd have 12 investment units, and I would spread it across 12 different mutual funds, quite frankly. And in each of those cases, I would go according to the past track record of the managers. She might be in some growth and income funds. She might be in some corporate bond funds. She could have a couple of government bond funds. She could have a large cap international fund, because she's able to live off of whatever portfolio she's in. So really what we're designing here is a portfolio that's going to let the estate grow the best for her heirs. You see what I'm saying?
I understand.
The phone number at the office is 919-872-7000.
But then I would also do the estate plan simultaneously. And you could do that one of a couple of ways. But one way that comes to mind would be using the Section 664 trust. She has the very strong possibility of leaving an estate well over $1 million if she lives a little while. And so you could have all of this growth in the Section 664 trust with yourself. And how many other heirs are there besides yourself?
A total of four.
Well, you could have four beneficiaries, income beneficiaries from the trust, so that the trust would then pay out for the lifetime of those four.
She's of the age that grew up during the Depression.
Right.
How do you get them to understand that the money in the CDs is a losing proposition to her just because of inflation?
Well,
and out of into something maybe a little more risky, but still a very safe investment.
Well, it's not a matter of risky or safe. It's a matter of her living expenses being met. How much do you think she needs to live on?
She's living on about $15,000 a year.
$15,000 divided by $600,000 is 2%, 2.5%. Well, we could increase her income to $30,000 a year without having any real risk, in my opinion, of depleting principal. Most senior citizens need to have education from an independent, certified financial planner, someone who is impartial, not trying to sell them something, but someone who can educate, analyze, and decide what's best, and help them understand what's best. Very often when they see that their estate is going to be paying a couple $100,000 in taxes, that really starts to bother them. So it's an educational process. If she's open for education, then you should set up a meeting with a certified financial planner and let her go through a session of education.
We find this is a typical situation. We have a lot of cases like that. Lot of widows that, you know, their husbands accumulated, you know, over their lifetime, or maybe they both were, you know, had income, and or they inherited assets that have appreciated, and they don't always need all the income, but you want to, certainly, as Doug said, you want to make sure you're meeting her need, but also you want to look to the future, right, Doug?
You've been listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters provides you with a personal financial hotline on any subject where money really matters. For more information, you can call Doug and Linda in Raleigh at 872-7000. That's USA 7000. Listen again next Sunday at 6:05 for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on 680 WPTF.